Great. Thankful to have another opportunity to speak, and I thought we would continue in our study of David. And again, we'll be looking at 1 Samuel chapter 19 this evening, really the same passage that we looked at in part one of this lesson, but we'll be looking at some additional points that the Lord wants us to see here. But just to refresh our minds a little bit, at the beginning of chapter 19 in verse 1, we see that the point has gotten to where Saul is openly speaking to Jonathan as well as his own servants in how to go about killing David. In verses 5 and 6, at that point in time, Jonathan is able to convince Saul to withhold from that plan and to spare David. And so we see David there coming back into Saul's presence in verse 7. David once again goes out and leads the battle against the Philistines in verse 8, and there's a very great slaughter as there had been so many times before. But then that was very short-lived with Saul, and we see in verse 9 that yet again an evil spirit comes on Saul, and he again is seeking to kill David. So over and over this has been happening. But this is really, as we're reading the account here, this is really the last time that Saul doesn't change his mind after this, and from now on until the end of Saul, David is going to be pursued by him, and this goes on literally for years, as we'll see. And so here Saul is once again seeking to kill David, and he puts messengers outside of David's house as he was able to flee from him there in presence of Saul. And David flees to his house, and we read there in the middle of that chapter where Michael helps David to escape. And in our last lesson, we saw and we asked the question, well, what did David do and where did he go? And we talked about how he chose to go to Samuel to seek that counsel that he knew Samuel would have of God. And that this is certainly a reminder to all of us when we are facing persecution, which the Lord has promised us we will. We recall what the Lord tells us if we are faithful and we're serving Him and we're living godly lives, as He tells us in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12. There He says, "Yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution." And so we understand from the Scriptures that the Lord has a way for all of us to grow, to have His divine nature, and that throughout our lives is going to involve times where we suffer for righteousness' sake. And certainly here, as we're reading this account with David, David has been a faithful servant to Saul from the very beginning. And of course, we read and studied earlier how the Lord chose David because of his heart, and that he was seeking God, and he was seeking to have God's heart. And that needs to be describing us as well. And so we need to be reminded here as we're looking through the life of David, this, along with many subsequent times that he's persecuted, but we can learn from these things and see how David responds in these situations, and we can understand, well, this is how the Lord wants us to respond as well. And so in that first lesson, then we did talk about how David was seeking the Lord. And he was seeking the Lord for his counsel. And that is certainly why he would have gone to Samuel there in the latter part of the chapter that we'll read here in just a minute again. But in Psalm 16 and verse 7, we read this in our first lesson where David said, "I will bless the Lord who has given me counsel. My reins also instruct me in the night seasons." So David was constantly looking to the Lord for his counsel to understand how he needed to go and proceed. And we also read in Proverbs 24 and verse 5 concerning the battles here. And in verse 6 we read there, and it says, "For by wise counsel thou shalt make thy war, and in multitude of counselors there is safety." Well, that not only applies to the physical battles that kings fight, but it applies to the spiritual battles that we all have to fight as Christians. And we need to be looking to God for our counsel just as David did. We need to be turning to his word and seeking him. And we saw that there as he fled, as Michael helped him out of that window, and he fled from his home. He turned and went to Naoth, to Samuel. And so we'll read verses 18 through 24 again to refresh our minds and to look at some additional points from this passage. Beginning in verse 18, it says here, "So David fled and escaped and came to Samuel, to Ramah, and told him all that Saul had done to him. And he and Samuel went and dwelt in Naoth. And it was told Saul, saying, Behold, David is at Naoth in Ramah. And Saul sent messengers to take David. And when they saw the company of the prophets prophesying, and Samuel standing as appointed over them, the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul, and they also prophesied. And when it was told Saul, he sent other messengers, and they prophesied likewise. And Saul sent messengers again, the third time, and they prophesied also. Then went he also to Ramah, and came to a great well that is in Sekhu. And he asked and said, Where are Samuel and David? And one said, Behold, they be at Naoth in Ramah. And he went thither to Naoth and Ramah, and the Spirit of God was upon him also. And he went on and prophesied until he came to Naoth and Ramah. And he stripped off his clothes also and prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Wherefore, they say, is Saul also among the prophets?" So we want to consider some additional points as we have read this passage again. And one of the first things we want to note here is what happened in this situation as Saul was seeking and coming after David. Again, that was his intent. We saw there from the very beginning of the chapter where he was openly speaking to ones about how they would go about to kill David. And so here we see, as David has fled to be with Samuel, that in verses 20 to 23, Saul sends three different waves of messengers to go after David. And why is it that he has to send three different waves? Well, we see that every time these messengers, they come to Samuel, and it's interesting to note there that apparently this was a regular way that Samuel was being over the prophets, as it noted there in verse 20, when they saw the company of prophets prophesying and Samuel standing as appointed over them. So we see here that this was something that was regularly done, where Samuel was appointed to be over these prophets, and they were there prophesying, and certainly that would have been a very interesting thing to have heard and seen some of that. But now Saul sends these messengers, the first wave to go after David here, and when they come, they begin to prophesy just like all of these other ones before Samuel. And so what does Saul do? Well, he sends another wave. I guess he figured that first wave was defective or something. And so he sends a second wave. And what do? Well, they prophesy also. You have to wonder what Saul was thinking. But again, he sends yet a third wave, and the same thing happens with the third wave. And so then we see in verse 24 where Saul goes himself. So Saul somehow thinks that he now himself is going to be able to take care of this matter. And so he goes on, and we see that just as those first three waves of messengers, Saul himself also goes and he prophesies, and it notes there that he lay down all that day and night and prophesied, and to the point where the people said, "Well, is Saul also among the prophets?" And you have to wonder what Saul was thinking there as he was there prophesying, of what was going through his mind as he was doing that. That was completely opposite to what his intentions were. But we see here what was happening. Well, certainly the Lord was showing Saul, and indirectly he was showing David as well, and reminding David who was in control here. Saul was right there in Naoth, where David and Samuel were, and yet there wasn't a thing he could do to touch David, because the Lord, that was not the Lord's plan. And so we see the Lord making a way for Saul to get ever so close, but yet unable to do anything with David. Did Samuel, did the prophets, did they flee when they saw Saul coming for David? You know, they didn't run. They understood the Lord was at work here. And it's very unfortunate that Saul did not understand that message. You would have to wonder, as he was sending these waves of messengers, and as they were all doing something that was very much at odds with what their original purpose was, you would have to wonder, why didn't Saul get that message? Why was he not understanding here that he was going against the Lord? And, you know, it brings to mind the time, and we actually touched on this in our class earlier today, where Saul, Jesus appeared to Saul in Acts chapter 9. We'll look at that account briefly. We're reminded where Saul was on his way to Damascus with a very a particular intention in mind of going after the Christians and rounding them up and binding them to put them in prison. But again, we see, well, this wasn't at all what the Lord's plan was. And we see that here at this time that Saul, this other Saul, who later became known as Paul, that there was no way that he was going to be successful in his effort either. And so we see there in verse 3, it says, as he journeyed, that is Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined round about him a light from heaven. And he fell to the earth and heard a voice saying unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord said unto him, Arise, and go into the city, and it shall be told thee what thou must do. So we see here that a very, very different response from Saul here in Acts chapter 9. We might ask the question, what might have been the right question for King Saul to have asked when he found himself prophesying? Well, we see Saul here in Acts chapter 19 asking the question. He immediately understood and asked the question, Lord, what will you have me to do? It would have been a good thing, would it not, if King Saul had had that humility to understand that the Lord was at work here, and that that he needed to understand that he was not going to be fruitful in his mission to go after and to defeat David. And so here we see, though, the right response here from Saul in Acts chapter 9, where he is understanding that the Lord, this is the Lord. And so he immediately asks this question, what will you have me to do? We see another similar example in Numbers chapter 22 concerning another, this time a prophet of God, Balaam, where we see in the context here that Balak, the king of Moab, is intending to come against Israel to destroy them, and he wants to use Balaam, the prophet, to do that. We see in verse 22 that the Lord was very angry with Balaam. In verse 22 it says, God's anger was kindled because he went, with King Balak. And the angel of the Lord stood in the way for an adversary against him. Now he was riding upon his ass, and his two servants were with him. So here is Balaam on his way to go to Balak. We see the account here in verse 23. It says, the ass saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way and his sword drawn in his hand. And Balaam smote the ass to turn her into the way. But the angel of the Lord stood in the path of the vineyards, a wall being on this side and a wall on that side. And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she thrust herself into the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall, and he smote her again. And the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. And when the ass saw the angel of the Lord, she fell down under Balaam. And Balaam's anger was kindled, and he smote the ass with a staff. And the Lord opened the mouth of the ass, and she said unto Balaam, What have I done unto thee that thou hast smitten me these three times? So here we see that this donkey is had its eyes opened to behold this angel of the Lord that was standing in the way to block Balaam. So the donkey stops and balks at going any further. And we see now that it actually begins to speak to Balaam. The Lord opened the mouth of this donkey and he begins to speak to Balaam. Now, you know, just like King Saul, we see here that Balaam doesn't seem to be, he seems a little slow getting the message here, doesn't he, right? What maybe should we do if our animals begin to speak to us? We probably ought to think about that a little bit and understand, you know, there's something going on here that is not quite normal. And so it's interesting here that Balaam in the next few verses carries on this conversation with this donkey. And again, it really kind of points out how deceived one can become in being intent on what they're intending to do when they are fighting against the Lord. And so Balaam here is having this argument with this donkey of his. And then finally, in verse 31, it says, "The Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way and his sword drawn in his hand, and he bowed down his head and fell flat on his face." And then in verse 32, it says, "The angel of the Lord said unto him, Wherefore hast thou smitten thine ass these three times? Behold, I went out to withstand thee, because thy way is perverse before me." So the Lord makes it very plain to Balaam, I've withstood you because your way is perverse. The account that the Lord gives about Balaam in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 15 and 16, you know, Balaam is held up now for eternity as an example that we certainly don't want to follow. And so there in verse 15, speaking of these ones who have turned away from God, he then brings up Balaam as this example to consider. It talks there and says, "These have forsaken the right way and are gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, but was rebuked for his iniquity. The dumb ass, speaking with man's voice, forbade the madness of the prophet." That word madness there is interesting. If you look up that word, it's a compound word that basically is taking the word beside or next to and mine and putting them together. And I didn't have time to do the word study, but you have to kind of wonder whether this is maybe related to our phrases where we say someone is out of their mind or they're beside themselves. And here is this prophet of God who now is going to consider these this reward of these wages, going and helping someone to work against the very people of which he was to be a prophet. And certainly he was out of his mind for even thinking that such a thing, even considering that. And so the Lord uses this word to describe Balaam, but he was taken by that desire for these wages, and he was rebuked by the Lord for that. And so again, we bring this back to Saul, and we realize, well, really, Saul is not falling in line with these examples, is he not, where the Lord is giving these things, and certainly as Saul was observing them, he should have understood that, you know, the Lord is telling me something here, but Saul wasn't getting that message, and he was continuing to try to pursue this intention that he had to kill David. Now, we also want to be reminded and understanding that God had a plan for David. We recall from back in chapter 15, we read earlier there in one of our first lessons concerning what the Lord said about King Saul way back at that time. The Lord had rejected Saul from being king. In 1 Samuel 15 and verses 22 and 23, we see that at that point in time, that Saul had become very proud, and he was not seeking the Lord and had turned from him. And so here Samuel is confronting Saul at that time. In verse 22, Samuel says to King Saul, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected thee from being king." So the Lord had made it very plain to King Saul back in chapter 15 that Saul was rejected by God from being king. In the very next chapter, we had also looked in one of our earlier lessons concerning when Samuel went to David to anoint him to be the king. There in verse 13, he anointed David in the midst of his brethren. So it was very clear that the Lord had a plan for David, and that plan was for David to be the king. And we see all throughout this that David understood that the Lord had an intention for him. He had a purpose and a plan for him. And we need to be reminded about that concerning ourselves as well. But also keep in mind that when the Lord has a plan to carry out something, it's not like he necessarily is going to accomplish that maybe as quickly as we think. When it comes to David, for example, it's roughly 7 to 8 years, perhaps more, from the time when David was anointed there in chapter 16 by Samuel until the time that he was actually installed as the king in Hebron. And it was another 7.5 years after that before David was king over the entire nation. In the meantime, we see, as we're beginning to read now in chapter 19, we're seeing Saul continually persecuting David and seeking after his life. And this went on literally for years. And so here was David, who had been anointed by the Lord, by his prophet. It was very clear that the Lord's plan was for David to be the king. But yet, that didn't mean it was going to be carried out the next week, did it? We see that literally many years went by before that actually took place. It reminds us of some other accounts that we can read about in the scriptures. For example, that of Joseph in Genesis chapters 37 to 41. In chapter 37 of Genesis, we see that Joseph was 17 years old when his brothers sold him into slavery, and he was carried down into Egypt. The Lord had a plan for Joseph. Joseph had been given dreams by the Lord, and he had been given those dreams where his family, his brothers, were bowing down to him as a ruler over them. And, of course, that was all prophesying of the things that were getting ready to come at some point later, where Joseph indeed would rule over them. But in this case, it was about 13 years later. In Genesis chapter 41, after Joseph had been made a slave, served as a slave, was put in prison for years, it was through that period of 13 years that he finally got to this point in chapter 41, in verse 46, where it says that Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. So we see there that finally, after those 13 years that Joseph was made this ruler over Egypt. But we see again that the Lord had a plan for Joseph, just as he has a plan here for David. And the Lord is working many, many things, not just with these individuals and Joseph or David, but he is working things with the nations and with the others, such as Saul, as well as with the Pharaoh here. And so we need to understand that the Lord is at work, and the Lord is working with each of us in carrying out the plans that he has for us. In Philippians chapter 1, he encourages us here to remember that as we go through this life and as we endure various things. Philippians 1, beginning in verse 1, he says, Paul and Timotheus, the servants of Jesus Christ, to all the saints in Christ Jesus which are at Philippi with the bishops and deacons, grace be unto you and peace from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making request with joy for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he which has begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. So here, as he's writing to the church in Philippi, he starts out in verse 3, by reminding them that he's thanking God every time that he remembers these Christians here in Philippi, and how he is praying for them in always in his prayers, and for their fellowship, their partnership in working with Paul to accomplish the Lord's will. And then in verse 6 there, we see that he's reminding them that God has begun a good work in them and in Paul and in all of us as Christians, as ones who are serving the Lord. He's begun a good work in us, and we need to be reminded of that. We need to be confident that what will happen, as he says there in verse 6, that the Lord is going to perform this good work until the day of Jesus Christ. And so we see him now, as we're considering this example with David, the Lord is working with David here, and he's working to complete this work in David. And this is very early now, where he's not even yet been seated as the king. And so we see these things happening, but we need to be reminded and understanding that the Lord is at work and he's carrying this out. And we also have to be reminded, you know, what was David? David observed what happened here. David was seeing this when the servants were coming to come to get him and to come and kill him. He saw exactly what happened with these servants, how they all suddenly fell down and began to prophesy. And he saw where Saul himself did the same thing. And certainly as David observed that, what would he have realized? Well, certainly he would have been encouraged to know that, you know, the Lord is at work. The Lord is accomplishing this purpose that he had with David. And David speaks about this in Psalm 40, not just this situation, but this applies to this and many other situations that David endured. But we see what David understand as he considered these things that were happening around him. So we'll read the first few verses here of Psalm 40, beginning in verse 1. It says here that it is a psalm of David. He says, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings. And he has put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear, and shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that makes the Lord his trust and respects not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Many, O Lord my God, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done, and thy thoughts which are to usward. They cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. So as David considered all of the things going on, he realized that there were more things than could possibly be numbered in terms of what the Lord was working. And so there in verse 5, many, O Lord, my God, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done. So we see that David understood as he observed these different situations, such as the one that we're reading about tonight, where Saul came and, you know, as well as his messengers, and they were there falling down and prophesying. You know, David saw that. He understood the Lord is at work here. And, you know, the Lord is protecting me from Saul and his messengers being able to defeat me. And David recognized that the Lord delivered him through that, and that the Lord was at work. And so we need to recognize as well, when we look around, that the Lord is working all things after the counsel of his will. the Lord has a plan for all of us, as we saw there in Philippians chapter 1. He's begun that good work in those of us who are Christians, who are seeking Christ. And the Lord is going to accomplish that good work that he's begun until we see Christ. And we need to be encouraged by that, just as David was. And we need to be having that ability to continue on, to press on, knowing that the Lord is working with us. The Lord encourages all of us, as he tells us in Romans chapter 8. We often read verse 28, where he reminds us that the Lord is working all things together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Well, certainly David was called. He was called to be the king. The Lord wasn't quite ready for him yet to be taking that position, but he was working with him to bring that to pass. And he's working with all of us to bring to pass the things that he wants to be accomplished in us as Christians. And so he's working all of these things for good. And we need to be looking around and recognizing that the Lord is very much active and working in all of our lives and in this world around us. And in verse 31, as we are encouraged to remember his purpose, that he is working, in verse 31, what shall we say then say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? You know, again, Saul was so close, but yet there was nothing that he could do to go after David. He was right there, just probably with an eyesight of David. But nevertheless, the Lord stopped him and showed him who was in control there. And so we see and we need to consider that the Lord is working with us. And David then continued to persist in the thing the Lord had called him to do. You know, from a human perspective, what would we think? Well, the Lord had said David is going to be king. Up till now, well, things really haven't worked out so well from a human perspective, have they? David has been many times close to being killed, and here he is on the run from King Saul. So from a human perspective, things didn't look like they were going very well. But we need to be reminded that the Lord has his reasons for bringing about these things. And the Lord is protecting David, as we see. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we all need to recognize that we also, just as David was called to do some very particular things, we also are called. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning in verse 23, here Paul is reminding the church of what his preaching is about. He says there in verse 23, "But we preach Christ crucified, unto the Jews a stumbling block, and unto the Greeks foolishness. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised has God chosen, yea, and the things which are not to bring to naught things that are. That no flesh should glory in his presence. But of him are ye in Christ Jesus, who of God has made unto us wisdom and righteousness and sanctification and redemption. That according as it is written, he that glories, let him glory in the Lord." So here we see him reminding the church in Corinth, and by extension all of us, that we have a calling. And we might be reminded there that the word church itself is the word ecclesia, literally the called out. And so we are called out. We're called out of this world, and we're called to some particular things. And we'll see shortly what we're called to. But we need to be reminded that we have a calling. The Lord has a purpose for us, a plan for us. And as we understand that calling and consider that calling, he goes on there, as we read in those last few verses, that God has chosen certain ones out of this world to that calling. And he's not chosen the ones that are mighty and strong and wise in the ways of this world. He's chosen, as we see there, the ones who are baits and the ones that are not wise according to the world. And why is that? Well, as we see there in verse 29, that no flesh should glory in his presence. And he reminds us that we all need to be glorying in the Lord. And we see David doing exactly that. David understood who was working here and whose power this was. In Psalm 3 and verse 3, there David says, "But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter up of my head." We see here that David had that humility to acknowledge that it wasn't his strength that was accomplishing these things. It was the Lord who was accomplishing these things. You know, we remember when Samuel first went to Jesse to anoint the king, when he saw the oldest son, Eliab, come out. You know, Samuel was thinking of this is the king. He looks like a king. But the Lord made the point there to Samuel that he's not looking at the outward. He's looking at the heart. And so we understand here that David's heart was a heart of humility. And we see this over and over throughout the Psalms, where David is recognizing who it is that is giving him the strength to do these things and that is protecting him from these things. And so here we see in verse 3 where he describes the Lord as being a shield for him. And he describes there that the Lord is his glory. We see him use that again in Psalm 29 in verses 1 and 2. There he says, "Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty. Give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness." So David understood that it was the Lord who was working here, and that it was the Lord whom he was going to glorify, not himself. And we recall that's exactly the trap that King Saul fell into. He was wanting to be raised up and above the people. But we see David here understood that it was the Lord that was accomplishing all of these things and that was giving him his strength. Again, in Psalm 62 and verse 7, David here says, "In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God." So David understood that the strength, his strength was in God. And he gave God that credit where it was due. And so as these persecutions were happening to David, he understood that the Lord was there with him, working to protect him, and that he was willing to patiently continue and persist in the thing that the Lord had for him to do. And we need to have that endurance as well. In Hebrews chapter 12, here we're reminded of Jesus. We're reminded of the race that the Lord has set before all of us, this Christian race. And so in verse 1, he says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," and of course, chapter 11 is full of these witnesses, including David, who endured these things. So we're encompassed by this cloud of witnesses that he describes. And so he says, "Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." Patience, endurance. And we see David doing exactly that here as he is fleeing from Saul, who is literally trying to take his life. We see these ones who have gone before us who were running with patience. And of course, he's in particular going to point to Jesus now in this passage. But we're reminded of Jesus and all of these ones that have gone before us, of the things that they had to endure as they were continuing to persist in their calling. They didn't give up. They didn't go home run away from these things. But they understood that the Lord had a plan for them that they needed to continue to follow. In Hebrews chapter 6, the Lord uses Abraham as another example. There in verse 15, he reminds us about Abraham, where he says, "After he, that is Abraham, had patiently endured, he obtained the promise." In James chapter 5, in verse 10, he tells us, think about all of these prophets. And of course, again, that includes David here. But he says in verse 10, "Take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering, affliction, and of patience." So again, as we think about David here, we realize that many times that his life was literally on the line here, but yet he persisted and endured and continued on in fulfilling the things that the Lord had for him to do. And so tonight we'll close with 2 Peter chapter 1 as we want to consider what is that calling that the Lord has for us. We are called out of this world, but we're also called to do some things as we live in this world. We're not to be of it. We are in it, but we are not of it. And that is because he has this plan for us. In verse 4, he notes there, "Whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these promises, you might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust." So we see that the Lord has a plan for all of us as his creation, that we might be partakers of his divine nature. So just as David had that intention that he was seeking to have God's heart, and that is the testimony, as we've mentioned before, that the Lord gives concerning David in the New Testament, that he was a man after God's own heart. And that needs to be describing all of us as God's children, that we are seeking to have that heart as well, just as David was seeking to do that. And so in the following verses, then he describes the Lord's plan for how we will do that. But part of this plan is that we have a job to give all diligence. He starts out there in verse 5 by saying, "Give all diligence," and then he goes on to describe the things that we need to do. And then as he finishes that up, he again, further down in verse 10, again says, "Wherefore, rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fall." So we all need to be reminded, as Paul describes it in Philippians 3, we have been called to a high calling. The Lord has a calling for us that we need to understand, and that we need to diligently go after, and that we need to endure in, just as David did. And so hopefully we all will be encouraged again to consider this example that we have in David, where he didn't give up, and he understood the Lord is in control, the Lord is working his plan, and I need to persist in doing the things that the Lord wants me to do. And so may we all continue to give that diligence and persist in the calling that we have all been called to.